Gia. Welcome to the motherfucking Soulcast. Today I got a fucking awesome interview lined up with the artist formerly known as Milo, aka Rory Ferreira. Milo is a rapper, a beat maker, a shopkeeper, a label runner, and all around magician of sorts, a maker. This interview is fucking awesome. I'm not gonna waste a ton of time blabbing on about it. If you don't know Milo's work, then listen to this interview and dig through his catalog. I mean, it's like, for me as like a philosophy nerd and somebody who loves experimental art and avant-garde hip-hop, experimental music, seeing what this motherfucker has done is just so inspiring. He just fuses poetry and philosophy with really skillful artistic rapping over like a really diverse and interesting range of beats and music. And the way he's done it has been a really shit-talking, DIY, not giving a fuck approach. And, you know, I'm just so happy to have gone down and do this interview and meet this motherfucker, and just really, really inspired by him. So I hope folks get something out of this interview. Go check out his music. Milo raps at Bandcamp. And learn more about him at soulfolks.org. In this interview, we talk about a ton of shit. We talk about, you know, the relationship between death, art, philosophy, poetry, life in Maine, connection to nature, black power, you know, fatherhood, and just like his general outlook. I mean, when I was editing this interview, I laughed out loud so many times because when I was doing it, I got kind of high before. I usually don't get high, but I wasn't that high. I don't know. And if you want to support this project, you can go to soulone.org/support. There you can sign up through Patreon or through Donate Pay, which is another alternative to Patreon. So if folks don't want to have to use that, they don't have to. Now, before we start this interview, let's hear from some comrades in the Channel Zero Podcast Network.
From Embers is a show produced about anarchist ideas and practice across so-called Canada. Every week we spend about an hour going in-depth about ideas, histories, and ongoing struggles that we think are important. We're a part of the Channel Zero Anarchist Podcast Network. You can check it all out at fromembers.libsyn.com.
Oh, yeah. Welcome to the motherfucking Soulcast, chilling at Soul Folks Records with Rory Ferreira.
Peace, what peace, up? Peace. What up? What it is?
How you doing today?
I'm lamping. I'm living. I'm shining.
Nice, nice. Well, yeah, like I said, we're down here at your record store, just kind of chilling.
We're in the pocket universe of my record store.
Yeah, the studio.
Yeah, we're in Afro Labs 9000. Which, not many people know what's behind that door.
I see you got a nice little book collection over here.
Hey, we do what we can.
Some Ishmael Reed.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, we got a few books. If your studio don't have books, I know you're not serious. That's all I'm saying. That's all I'm saying. If you're not stealing direct from the source where you make the shit, I know you're not serious.
Word up. Yeah, what do I have on the floor right now?
It gets to that point where you're like, man, what'd they say exactly? Let me see it. Let me just get the exact words. I'm going to just take it from them. And there's nothing wrong with that. That's part of what we do as artists, and that's how we keep each other alive. It's a great honor.
That's awesome. Yeah.
I hope people keep my shit in their studios. That'll make me happy.
That's great. Yeah, I mean, that's one of the big things I pick up from your music is, you know, this quality of like research and a real focus on philosophy, you know.
Yeah, cool.
And it's one of the things that, yeah, I just feel like it's really important. So can you kind of talk about your relationship with philosophy in general and like how it informs your art?
For me, I've always lived philosophy my own. My grandfather, my mother's father is a preacher. And my earliest memories are being in his church and talking to him and reading from the Bible and hearing him, you know, he's an old man from Blytheville, Arkansas. So, you know, it's kind of fire and brimstone style preaching. And, you know, how the word motivates people. All of that just as a kid really interested me, watching this man make people live their lives away because of his words. I was like, wow, what is that about? And then, you know, really most matters of religion are matters of philosophy. And you know, I guess from there, just the itch never went away. I never went to a nice enough school that had philosophy classes. I'm a public school student.
Yeah.
I went to a lot of schools. Like, by my time I graduated, I've been like 13. But it was all public schools. So I never had gotten a chance to actually, like, read philosophy. So, I don't know, in college, that was my first opportunity. I took it, and I was really struck by people who just wrote down the shit that I think about all day. You know, who am I? Real simple questions, you know? What is this? stuff that I would get lost on. Most people that I knew would be like, you're kind of dumb. I finally found this genre of writing that was all about that. And what I like about rap music is rap is that same way. It's a genre of music where people are like, oh, you kind of dumb. But it's actually just like, it's all specialty data. It's like really interesting philosophical data. Rap is the most philosophical art form. Like, every bit about it is a serious philosophical question. That's why we have such strong, visceral reactions to this art form. So to me, it seems like a natural marriage. I wanted to take it to a place I never seen other people do it. I wanted to incorporate a vocabulary I didn't hear other MCs using. A lot of people hate my vocabulary in rap because they feel it's inappropriate or something. Like, you know, what is the purpose of this word in this context, in this song, in this genre? But to me, being, I don't know, a person born of rap, I feel I have a special license to ill. And, you know, to update the vocab, to expand upon it. Especially when I was younger, you know, I started rhyming, like, on the board, making money at 19. So from that time on, from 19 on, I really felt it was my job to do things that other people were afraid to do because they weren't cool. I was like, well, shit, who's cooler than me? I will dictate what's cool. And if I fuck around with these things, other cats will fall in line. And sure enough, that's what happened.
Well, it's funny, I always think about, like, nerd rap,
I
get kind of, like, defensive, and I'm like, man,
right.
how is what I'm doing not nerd rap? Like,
right.
You know, like...
Well, my early shit, I called my shit nerd hop.
Oh, did you really?
Yeah, word is wrong, on my first mixtape, yeah, nerd hop, this is nerd hop, I'm on that David Foster Wallace, but to me, that was cool, because it's like, look, man, at my school, rapping some shit like that might get you smacked up. And here I am rapping that shit. What's up? Smack me up. Smack me up, dog.
Well, that's funny. I said that to Mike Eagle,
yeah.
You know, when I was talking to him over. I was like, you know, man, like, when I hear Milo sometimes, I just think of, like, when people wanted to, you know,
yeah.
throw us off the stage in the 90s and shit, you know?
Yeah.
And,
yeah, man. So. Throw me off. And what I found is that cats don't want to do that, you know? Because, again, whatever, archetypes are at play. Stereotypes are at play. Assumptions are at play. And I'm a masterful manipulator of all those things. So again, I feel like it's my job to do what you just said. Because, yeah, dog, you could hear my shit and be like, why is it? Man, fuck this dude. But it's like, come to my show and say that same shit. You're not going to. Promise you. And so it's my job. Wielding that. There's some people who it comforts greatly. It's some people who it deeply bothers them on a real, real serious level, man. And I love that. To me, that's like, all right, I'm making art. That's what I'm doing. I'm doing my job. I'm making friends and I'm making haters.
Well, it's like, you know, you're like an interesting phenomenon as far as rap goes right now, to be on an indie level, fully indie, fully DIY, you know, still being like top-selling vinyl on Bandcamp, getting Billboard, you know, a million Spotify plays this month. Like,
thank you, bro.
That's fucking awesome.
Thank you, bro.
And so I've just been like listening to all your albums over the last couple days really heavily. And like, what I like about it is that it's like a mood, you know. It's like every album is different, is pretty different. Some albums are like very aggressive, very much like, oh, you think I read too much?
Ah, let's fight, dude.
You know.
Yeah, let's fight.
Other ones are like, you know,
I be reading hella.
I'm just sitting here eating my cereal, you know. And I'm nervous, like Carl Drago or whatever. Like, I love that song. And I don't really know what the question is. I guess it's just like, for people who've never heard your music before, you know, like, how is it you're approaching writing rap songs and thinking and rap in this day?
I'm approaching it like we always have. I'm approaching it in the most honest ways I know how. My grandfather told me that rap music is when a group of us is in a room with a bottle of Jack Daniels. Like, yo, I'm doing the ancient methods. I'm going deep with it. I guess maybe that's what differs from my shit than the next, is that I'm historical. I very much am studying the history before me and know my place and what my aims are with that. I'm evoking things, you know, something like that I think is kind of weird about rap, or unspoken about rap, like the duende.
The duende?
The duende.
What's that?
That's what we invoke. We invoke the duende. When we rap, we bring up the fact that, yo, life is this beautiful, amazing thing, but at any time, you could die.
Right.
That's what rap is about. And guess what? Even the dudes doing it die at any time. One of my favorite rappers died this year. And I really cried. Jimmy Wapo, rest in peace. Yo, like, that's what I'm saying. I was really trying to get this dude beats, and he was killed this year. Fuck rap. And so that's duende, right? And that's what makes our art form part of it so, like, that's why it hits in a way that country doesn't. That's why it hits in a way that classical doesn't. Because we have duende power, among other things. But in part, we have duende. And like Lorca talks about doing that, you know, again, just that element of any time death is present. And that's why we're choosing to dance like this. That's why we talk like this. That's why we dress like this. That's why we do this. Because we know death is right there.
Yeah.
And just, okay, so yeah, to get back to the head, just knowledge of this. I explicitly know these things and I'll talk about them. And maybe that's like K-5 in rap to a degree. And
this is what?
K-5. I don't know how you say that, right? K-5.
Okay.
It's like what they call the curtain of wrestling. They call it K-5. Like, it's you're pointing at the string. You know, you're like, so this is a string holding this guy, and that's how he's able to fly.
Right.
That's K-5. You're like, to talk about that, you're just supposed to be like a flying man. So I'm saying my sensibility of the history of rap and these different aspects in play, such as duende, it's kind of like K-5 to a degree. That's what makes my shit different. And that's why people react to it how they do. Some people are like, wow, that's really novel. That's interesting. That made me stop and think for a minute. And some people are like, yo, I'm not supposed to, not here.
So it's like, it's always your last words.
yeah, to a degree.
That's crazy. Yeah, I was, you know, the death drive also.
Death drive?
The death drive that we are, human beings are like moths to a flame, you know?
Yeah, the death consciousness. Yeah, it's all there.
But also that's what hip-hop comes out of, too, in many ways.
That's what hip-hop's about. That's what hip-hop's about. The birth of rap itself, and so many of your favorite rappers, if you were to stop and learn their story, might talk to you about
a death that was very important to their genesis or their maintenance or the birth of their style or the moment when they knew something, that was all triggered by death in most cases. You know, it's not often that people say a birth is what triggered it. They say death is. And I don't know, again, rap more than any other musical genre, right now at least, has that quality, and that's what makes the art hit.
Well, just to do a twist on that, in one of my lines that I wanted to talk to you about was, every day I watch the neighbors build their gallows.
Yeah, true story. Yeah. True story. On Peaks Island, where I was living, I was watching a man build what for about 6 months looked like a gallows. And it was real trippy, man. It was real weird. And then eventually he built the other side, and it was like this oblong house thingy. But, like, people would come over, and I noticed every single person who visited my house would make the same joke. He's like, is that guy building, like, a place where you hang people? What is it? Because it looked like it. And it had, like, the overhang. All it needed was a rope. It had all the other elements. And it was really eerie. And I was like, man, what is my response to this? This carpenter is building a gallows next to me. Like, how do I respond? I, too, make things, motherfucker. What shall I do? And, like, you know, part of it was that track. That track came out. But that was a literal thing. And something that I try to be aware of. And Frank O'Hara, you were looking through my books. You know, we stay with Frank O'Hara in here. Something that Papa Frank blessed me with is just the eye. Like, poetry does write itself if you have the eye. And just like if you were a photographer, you know, you have an eye. The musicians, you have an ear, etc. A lot of people think poetry is an ear. It is, to a degree, but it's also an eye. Being able to be like, this is a poem. This, what I'm seeing, is a poem. You know, a poem can be many things.
So, yeah. Yeah, I feel that way, too.
Yeah, hell yeah.
Poetry writes itself. But also, like, to me, all great poets are philosophers.
Oh, definitely.
And all great philosophers are great poets.
That harkens to Heidegger. Poetry is to be real, the language of philosophy. You need a language inside a language to talk about a lot of those ideas. How do you do that? Poetically. Right. That's what we call poetic language. Oh, you're talking an idea about an idea about an idea? That's kind of weird. Usually has a fucked up meter. You know, you're parsing shit out. Like, it's there. Yeah, that's Heidegger's whole shit. If you read What Is Called Thinking, not to promote reading Heidegger, but if you must, there's some cool shit in there, What Is Called Thinking. And Mann's really says poetry is what's called thinking. What you would be able to really identify as true thought is poetry. And if it's not poetry, you can be convinced it's probably not even someone's real thinking. It's just some fucking rote
writing, yeah.
Just some fucking formulae, whatever the fuck. So, yeah.
that's fucking awesome. One of the fucking stoned.
Tight.
One hit.
Oh, man's only had one hit. I'll verify. I've had a bit more than one hit. But you know, we loosey
no,
goosey in the
but
cut.
No, what I was gonna say is. So you know, we've chatted online, and I've referred to you having good politics. I'm like, oh, if you like good political music, check this guy out. And then you were like,
you said
no politics here. You're like, no politics here, man. You know, and I was like, okay. but it's like, I feel like you're really, like, clearly, you know, you're a radical. You know, you're not somebody who is down with the status quo.
Thank
like,
you.
You know, you have a black power fist inside of your record store.
I mean, I'm about black people. I want black people to win. That's what I am. That's why I say no politics, because my politics, to quote Melvin Van Peebles, is to win. I want to win. I'm about black folks winning. That's all I really care about. And a lot of people don't fuck with that, and that's cool. I got a lot of friends who, when we really get into our quote-unquote politics, black people were like, yo, dog, I don't know if I agree. And it's like, okay, that's fine. But I don't know. To me, I'm a black guy. I'm a black person. And I've chosen in this time, in 2018, as a father, as a partner to a black woman, the father to a black boy, son of a black woman, I've chosen at this time to make art. that's it. That's my whole statement. That's as far as my politics goes. I'm making art right now. I could be out here, like, in Maine. You know, Maine's a crazy state. You could just go down to a pawn shop and buy a gun. And you have open and concealed carry license in Maine. Just because you're 21, don't have no felonies.
Oh, really? You can? Anyone can conceal?
Anyone can conceal.
Damn.
And then you know what? The only permit you got to apply for is you can get an extra concealed carry, which lets you conceal carry where it says not to.
Jesus.
Like if you don't want to put the strap down at the church or the park or whatever, if you're like, nah, I need my tool, you can get that. But anyone in Maine at any time can have a gun. You know? And there's a whole lot of reasons to have a gun and just walk around with one. There's plenty of good reasons to do that, but I'm out here making rap songs. So yeah, you know, I feel like that's the extent of my politics. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. How do you like living in Maine? You know, you grew up here.
Yeah, I kind of did. It's weird. Like, my mom has lived out here for, shit, like 14 years. And my folks have been divorced my whole life, so I would come out here a lot for summers and other vacations and stuff. And early on in my life, my pops lived out here, so I did a little schooling. But I don't know, I like it a lot. It's always surprising me. Sometimes it lets me down, I can't front. It hadn't ever let me down before I had a family and shit. But that's a lot. You put a lot of strain on a place by bringing your whole family there. So. But yeah. Seriously, man, sometimes Maine lets me down. People are weird about a black family. That's something I've had to come to grips with. But there's a lot of cool shit in Maine. I love just being able to be wild and free. And for the most part, people here are about that. You know? They let you be your weird self.
Yeah, it's definitely, I mean, it's an artsy place.
That's all you can
ask for. It's like this weird hippie.
That's all you can ask for.
I still can't quite... Right. I don't have the place figured out yet. I'm just still like...
Definitely not.
Yeah.
Me neither. But I mean... I'm not really trying to. I think that's part of Maine too. It's just being like, fuck it, man, shrug. You know, whatever.
So when you're saying people, this isn't like a great place all the time to be a black family, are you thinking about like what happened at Shaw's and shit like that?
No, I'm not even thinking about Shaw's. I'm just thinking about living day to day as a black family, you know, taking my kid to the playground and he's the only black kid. You know, stuff like that. Little weird moments when I notice the kids start clicking, you know, and he don't have a clip. You know, not to say that it's crazy. Like, kids are like prisoners, you know, they just click up by race. It's weird.
It's like tribalism.
Right, out here it happens like that because it's just easy that way. And you know, then it breaks down. So it's like, okay, we're the blonde white boys, so we all hang out. And the brown-haired white boys are over there. And then there's, you know, the white boys who are maybe too thin or too big. And they're all one place. So, you know, they all sort. And it's crazy. They auto-sort any playground. I watch my son play, and they auto-sort. And for a while, when he was younger, they would all play together, which was kind of hip, you know, when they're like a year old, 18 months even, they're all kind of playing together. By 2, 3, man, they're clicking. So it's just tough. Stuff like that is tough, man. I don't even know. I don't want my son to experience school out here. It's not good enough for him, so we won't be here for that time. But right now, it's just cool. It's cool to have him out in nature, and that's why we're here, because that's more important than anything, a connection to Earth.
Right on.
Connection to what's real. This is what's real. Fuck all these people, even the ones out here, you know? Like, what's real is your relationship to this planet, to what we're walking on, to what we're breathing, to what we're eating. This is what's real. We got to get that in his mind first, even as much as his mom and I would love to be somewhere that's, you know, more cracking or whatever. And it's a good for us, you know? In a time of suffering or whatever the fuck we're in, it's good to just take a breath. Out here, life is slow.
Right on.
It's really slow. Mind-numbingly fucking slow. And you're just thinking all the time. And you have a lot of time to also develop habits and crafts and things that get you in oneness with yourself that aren't thinking. Like, you know that I've been making fucking pedals and shit. That's something, soldering, that I love to do. I'll put on an album, I'll start soldering, and it's like I'm working, but I'm not really thinking about shit. My mind is just focused on not burning myself. Out here, Maine is all about that type of stuff.
Yeah, we just got a wood stove, and I never really.
Oh yeah,
never
yeah,
had a wood
dog.
Stove.
Oh my god!
But just like the act every day. Mm-hmm. Our house is an old house, so it's better to heat with like the act every day of like getting of like manually putting yeah. wood in the fire to keep the house warm.
Yeah, dude.
To have yeah, something to write by that's like very. Feels very yeah, real man. Looking out the
keep
window.
Keep them fingers
it's
warm.
A nice it is a nice it's a nice place to live for a lot of things.
Mm-hmm. Food out here is real cool, like not on the restaurant tip, but just like what you can get at stores and farms and the access to farms. That's probably unparalleled how easy it is to just roll up to a farm that has exactly what you want.
Yeah,
I feel like in Maine you have that, and it's like the farms are cool. The farmers are super cool. Like, it's like people out there who you're like, damn, man, why my whole life have I made fun of farmers? You know what I mean? Like, you come out to me and you're like, dog, this shit is like noble and pure and good. And like,
right on.
There are people doing fly shit that involves your food, and the pipeline cuts your access off to them. I hear you can just roll up on them and be like, thank you for these eggs, butter, and milk, and onions. Bye. That's wild.
Yeah.
That's insane. Like, man, I'm from Chicago. My family's from Chicago. It's not something we would have thought of having access to growing up.
Yeah, you had a line. I come from a place where it was a play on, I think, an AC Alone line where yeah. it had to be a rapper or a farmer or something.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I but did you have you ever worked on a farm?
Yeah.
Cause yeah. I was listening to this other song where you're like just going off about eating fruits. I'm like this motherfucker's had to have been around some.
Oh yeah. I grew up working on a couple farms when I come out here, and then for a while my first real job was here in Biddeford down the street. My mom ran an after school project for what they call at risk youth, where like you know, if it wasn't a school day they'd feed them lunch, if it was a school day we'd have snack, and you know, just positive activities they could get into. My first job was teaching the kids there gardening.
Oh,
and we
wow.
had a little plot in the city in Biddeford, and we would go to it every day and tend to our little crops and things. And it moved around a lot, and there was other folks, you know, adults and shit, and we all worked on it in conjunction. It wasn't like, this is my garden. But I hella grew shit with kids for many years. Shout out my boy Jason Malcolm. That was my man. It's him and I. We'd be up in there in the gardens. And it was crazy. It's like the parents would start to get real involved because the kids would love bringing home real stuff they'd grown. And like,
how old are kids of these?
Oh, dog. Anywhere from ages 5 to like realistically 12. It could be, they could be 17, but you know, they're not coming past 12 really.
Right.
That's just not cool. But we sometimes would get them. You know, like when you try to make the shit cool, you can get them. Which is whack to say that, but that's what it really is about. But yeah, some of the families would get super involved because the kids would bring home these, you know, cool little fruits and veggies, and then like derelicts and animals and shit would start eating about the garden, and the kids would cry.
Man. Oh,
like,
no.
Where my cucumbers go? Or whatever, you know, this thing that they loved, that they watched grow to be big, it wasn't there no more. And like parents would start being like, y'all was walking by the garden the other night, making sure nobody was going in there. You know, you should put a camera up there because, you know, they'd be real sad when the da-da-da. It was wild. People really take that shit to heart. And it's I bring up that story just to bring that up. Like, you take for granted how your food comes at the store. You're just like, this is my food. I don't fucking know nothing about it. But it's so easy to know everything about it. And once you do, it's actually addictive, you know? You watch this thing come into being. You're nourishing it, you know? You can talk to plants and give them positive thoughts and stuff. This shit really works. And it's, you know, kids will do this stuff. Tell the plants you love them. We love you, plants! You know? Get big and fat, man.
Yeah. I was noticing you were reading, you know, stuff about, like, black land ownership and
yeah.
like, how it peaked in 1905.
1910, yeah.
And you, were alluding to wanting to farm. Is that, like, something you're really thinking about doing?
Definitely something I'm thinking about doing. I just gotta get my resources right, man. You know, the name of the game is land ownership. The name of the game is having capital work with after that. And I'm not in a place, you know, my family has, I have no familial wealth. You know, my parents dropped out of high school, you know, like we just, you know, we work hard. I'm from a hardworking family. And I like that about us. But I feel like it's maybe a reality that within my lifetime, I can make sure my family moving forward has something, you know. And to me, that's like the best, yeah, the best investment. And, you know, we were bonding on some father shit earlier. Just as a dad, it's like, yo, what's iller, man? You get a farm dog? You good to go. You good to go. I'm disillusioned with a lot of the stuff that I used to believe in, including rap music. You know, school, all sorts of shit. I'm just like, is that shit real? I don't even know. You know, they be putting any old crackhead in charge of every school these days. You be like, should you go there?
Right.
Honestly?
Right.
You know, like, I'm so disillusioned with so much of modern life that it's like, what's real? What's real is what we eat every day. You know, what's real is working hard and going to bed tired and feeling good about it. That's what's real.
Yeah. I mean, it's funny because my wife is a elementary school teacher, and yeah, she teaches at like, was taught at like really cool schools, mm-hmm, and even she has been like, has thought about doing homeschooling.
Yeah,
you know, like, yeah, to me, like, that's that to me, I think of as almost like crackpot kind of shit. It's like homeschools. I think of like Kristen, the fact that my wife would suggest that, I was like, damn, you're a real optimist, and that's what you think of education in general. Mm-hmm. Like, it's crazy, man. It's crazy. It's, and like, from when I was a kid, it felt like military training and just like constant abuse. And now it's just like all tests. And
well, yo, it's like, it's just, man, it's worse than that now. It's just like, it makes people scared to make decisions. School fundamentally makes you nervous about all the decisions you make. And I'm around a lot more kids these days than I ever have been. Just watching them go from 2, 3, 4, 5 to 14, 15, 16. And how they go about their lives, that process, and what schooling does to them. And again, now having just a stake in the game, you know, having a kid. I'd like to have more kids. And it's like, do I want them to be like these people who let this society get to how it is?
Right.
You know, who write textbooks and say all these things and do all these things and then, you know, get confronted with shit that goes against that every day and they just turn a blind eye. That's part of what school does. Oh, there's a principal somewhere who will handle this stuff. And, you know, it's like, I don't know, when we move past this moment as a people, I hope that we just, you know, kind of retain that bristle for authority, you know? I see a lot of people these days who are like, man, fuck the police, fuck the government. Da, 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 da. It's like, yeah, dog, all the time, though. Not just right now, you know? Like, all the time, man. All the time. Fuck anybody who wants to limit what you're doing if what you're doing isn't hurting nobody.
And that's what, but again, like, that's why, like, my decision to move back here was very specifically to, you know, farm.
Hell yeah.
Because it's like, I don't know, I'm on some doomsday prepper shit. Yeah. I actually don't think this shit's gonna last.
Yeah.
And so it's like, if you wanna really, you know, have wealth to pass right on, it's like,
real
have
wealth.
It be chestnut trees.
Real and, wealth, brother. Yeah.
And shit like that. Yeah. Because, like,
make sure they know how to swim. Shit, yeah, like that.
Dress a wound.
Yo, seriously, you know, man, you giggling like the hood that I just left, where my son's actually born, where we were in Milwaukee, man. I'd estimate 3/4 of kids there don't know how to swim, man.
Oh, yeah.
Little,
yeah,
stuff like that, you know what I mean? Little stuff like that, which out here it's like, dude, you can't swim. You know what I mean? You right can't climb a tree. You can't, right, you know, that level of strength and just self-determination that out here is taken for granted. It's like, yes, these are the things that make you a human being. Most cities I've lived in, cats don't know how to do none of that shit.
Right.
You know? And it's like, they've just totally made it your connection to the earth nothing, so that way when they destroy the earth you feel nothing. You know, you can't blame these people for not taking this shit serious. They don't take anything serious. They don't take them fucking selves serious. They've never smelled good clean air. That's, man, we moved out here and we moved to an island. I was like, dog, I'll fight somebody just to breathe this air.
It was Peaks Island.
Yeah, yeah. Peaks, just to breathe this air, man. I love this air. I'm, ooh, like, wow. Just, I would be outside huffing air. Like, I can't explain it. Even, I just got off tour from the West Coast. That was the first shit I did when I got off the plane. Just gulp main air. Let me just get that. Let me get that. Yeah, man.
Yeah, I've been away from the ocean for like 20 years. Mm-hmm. And so when I came back here, I was just like, man, this shit is,
oh, man, that crazy funk. That crazy funk. Peaks so far, too. You got to go out, kind of. It's like a little 20-minute ride. Get to smell some of that salty froth. Crazy good smells. If fucking flatbread's got that thing woofing that day, you got like pizza smell on the air too. Yeah.
Yeah, my cousins used to live on Long Island, so we'd go out there a lot.
Oh, that's dope.
Just like, but the whole concept of islands.
But
like,
bro, even
in the United States, so you can't even conceptualize islands.
No, and let's conceptualize them further. There's an island in that harbor, Casco Bay, or whatever the fuck it is. I was looking on Zillow or some shit. That's for sale for $3.5 million.
Damn.
It has paved roads. It has a tavern, bowling alley, a chapel. It has like 4 or 5 houses. $3.5 million. I was like, this is crazy. Like, why don't, you know, I'm thinking like,
dude,
why doesn't
do a GoFundMe?
Like, why don't cats have shit? Like,
let's do a GoFundMe.
Yo, that's
revolutionary
wild.
Commune.
It has paved roads. It had like electric lighting already set up. Like some wealthy motherfucker already made this their spot. I don't know if it's still. This was like 6 months ago. I was just drooling at this. I don't have nowhere near enough money for that. But like, man, if I was a big boy rapper, that would be my first purchase. Was an island, and I don't know why they don't have them.
Yeah, there was like a small town for sale outside of Denver that we were looking at, and I was just like, man, because you can do that. You can buy a whole municipality in some places, and like, you know, set up
till they come for you.
Yeah,
ain't that
no cops here? No,
isn't that what the Sannyasins tried to do? Have you seen that shit?
Oh yeah,
yeah, dog. They might come for me, dog. Yeah, fuck the police. Just ban the police. Already, they're just clown shoes. They're clown shoes, man. The police make me mad. And it's funny is my son is teaching me again universal empathy. I consider myself very empathetic, very compassionate. I really center this in my being. Some people might think that's funny, but I do that. And I don't know, police is just like, I can't. But my son will, like, you know, wave at anyone. You know, he'll wave at a cop. He doesn't know what the fucking cop is. I'm just like, Doc, don't smile. But I don't say that. I don't say that to him because he's a baby, and I just want him to express love how it is. And it humbles me to see him just like, you know, a baby just sees a person and smiles at him, waves at him, says hi. And I'm only 26 years old. By all accounts, I'm still a really young person. I'm not a baby, but I'm young. And I'm already at this place. My heart is hardened to this degree. I'm like, man, fuck modern life and what you've done to me. You know what I mean? What you've taken from me. You know, I can't just smile at anybody. I can't. But I don't know. Living out here, it comes close to that sometimes.
One of the things we were talking about last time is I was talking about how, like, it doesn't seem like the cops are really killing people out here at
right.
the pace that they are elsewhere.
Bang, bang.
You're like, yeah, but the way that they are, there's almost something kind of worse about it.
Like, well, there's just the policing, right? So, like, in other places, they're just like, man, we just got to kill these black people. But here, they're like, we can just be really oppressive. Let's just be, like, on them, you know? Let's just be on them. And, like, it's crazy, because I say this from experience, like, the police just be on me here. And I mean, not to the point like they come in my shop and stuff, but like I feel like they drive by here a lot. They drive by where I live a lot, and I'm, you know, they always let me know. It's like, okay, cool. And even that to me is just weird. I've never really lived in a place where I was on no cop radar. You know, I live right. in cities. Again, my last spot was Milwaukee. You know, people getting killed in Milwaukee. They ain't got no fucking time for nothing I'm doing. No shit I'm talking. But out here, they hearing the shit I'm talking. And so it's like, cool, whatever. I'm still talking my shit. I love Maine. I really do. I just don't like police. I don't see the point. I don't see the point.
Well, yeah. To fucking be the boot on our neck.
Yo, you hear me, man? That shit is so wet, dude. It's so wet. It'd be the boot.
Well, it's just like, I was just like really trying to think about, I was like writing a song, thinking about like the relationship between the state and the mafia. And I was thinking like, at least if you pay the mafia, you get protection.
Yeah.
You know, like.
You get something.
You get something for your money.
You get something, man. Like with the cops, you're just looking at them all the time. They're always hating on you. They're always looking at me crazy, man. Out here, you know, I don't look like most people. And the police especially, you know, it's like, don't y'all have training, man? ain't y'all at least house trained, dog? Like, come on, man. Come on, man. And then let alone the stuff like, you know, brother gets beaten, jaw broken, right across the street from the police department on some racial shit. Two white boys jumped a black man across the street from the police department and broke his jaw. Only reason they didn't do worse is because he managed to run away from them. With a broken jaw across the street from the fucking police department.
Damn.
And he didn't run into the police department. you feel me? Like, that's what it is. So, yeah, right? What do we get for y'all? What do we get for y'all? Even out here, you're just letting us know we're not getting your protection. So it's like, man, we get high blood pressure from y'all. We get fucking hemorrhoids from y'all. Fuck y'all.
Yeah. I see you in the rear view, and then I start swerving.
Right. You're right. I see you, and then I speed for no reason. Because I want to get away from you, and might have a fucking fight or flight response that gets me a ticket.
Okay, so we're talking about main shit. One of the things you did when you moved here was open a record store.
Yeah,
called Soul Folks, It's a cassette store, cassette and vinyl. Can you talk about why that was an important thing for you to do and what you get out of it?
What you've
learned from it, also.
What I was saying earlier, my family been here for many years. There used to be a music store down the street. And I think maybe 3 years now it closed. And it was actually the place I bought, like, my copy of Illmatic. So I was like, damn, that's sad. They should have a music store here. It's something I've kind of flirted around with the idea of. And, I'd seen the old one. I was like, I could at least do that. Shit. And what if I specialized it? Because I've never been in one that was specialized for me. I've been in Fifth Element, but I didn't feel like that was specialized for me. That's like the rap shop that comes to mind. And I just wanted one that was more embracing, like, the dirty digger hip-hop kid. The just, like, weird, crusty rap dude who's like, I love rap. like, someone who still, like, wears their backpack in here. Like, like, mine's right there. I want that vibe. Biddeford, we made it happen. It's a great, great town. So cheap. Really crazy cheap. Like, we could get 10 artists here and all open up a shop and take it over. We're here already on 53 Main Street if you want some help. But we like it out here. What I've learned so far is that being a shopkeeper in America earns you way more respect than anything else you can do, which super sucks. That to me is the wackest part. Like, somehow I just became real. Like, all type of people have messed with me. I've had, members of Congress hit me up. They want me to be at this fundraiser.
Oh, really?
Yeah, because I'm the owner of Soul Folks Records. Like, they can say this thing that's like, doesn't that sound so good? Doesn't my town sound so cool? Like, it's just like, that's so fucking weird. Nothing's changed. It's the same shit, but because we have, like, a little doorway that's sanctioned by the town to make money in the name of rap, they can take that a little more serious. So we fuck with that. And that's been the great equalizer, I don't like to just whine on no offense, but I don't want to just whine on nobody podcast about fuck the police, I want to say fuck the police as a business owner, as somebody who, makes this place cool, as somebody who be at them little council meetings and all of that, I'm not just some anonymous face saying some shit because I think it sounds cool. And I just want them to know it's gotten to that point. We're here, we're mature, we have businesses, we're doing stuff, we make real money.
Right.
And it's fuck the police all day. We really don't like them. And we're over here doing the coolest shit in your town. So, what's up?
Right on. Mm-hmm. Another thing that you did recently that I thought was interesting was you've decided you're going to stop being Milo.
Yeah, man.
So, why, talk about what that means to you and, identity in general. And
yeah, I've never felt a real strong affinity to that name. It was the name I made on the spot because I was in a rap crew in high school and Cass was literally writing, like, what do I call you? And I was like, I don't know. That's a good question. Nobody ever asked me that. I'd never been in a rap crew before. So I was like, why not Milo? But definitely as I got older, I was like, I hate this name. But it just it's what people knew me as. It's how I got my plays and earned my keep and my money. And now I'm at a point in my career where I'm up to the challenge of making a new thing. I don't really care if people don't follow or they do follow or it ended at this for them. That's all fine and dandy. I'm up to the challenge. As an artist, I'm kind of bored with what people think Milo is. That's definitely impacting my ability to execute ideas to the degree I want them to. Again, people thinking just small, you know, thinking way too small, because this genre or how I first presented my music was so humble and so just like, if I could just have 1 minute of your time, sir, and a penny, it would be more than enough for this ministry. And like, you know, we just off that now. I want to do really cool shit on way bigger levels. And that requires capital. And Milo, I just didn't see that working out with that. So I wanted to make something that was more specialized. Something that was like, I don't know. Yeah, more engineered. You know?
I think there's a power to bookending art movements also.
Thank you, bro. I agree. And that's also what it was. You know, it's like Milo is truly over. Milo is about a kid. And I could not be that anymore. You know, I'm somebody's dad. Everything I'm doing has a different weight. And I watched that happen. You know, I watched myself tour for 6 years. And what was relationships on the road with promoters or bookers or whoever. You know, certain shit ain't cool, man. I got a family, dog. We ain't doing this shit. You know what I mean? Like, certain shit, you just like, the fuck you mean, bro? I didn't fly out here to get a promise and a long tale about some shit, bro. I gotta bring
home dinner. Don't make me walk dinner. Into the ATM.
Yo, exactly. You know what I mean? And shit where, like, before it's like, oh, Milo cool, though. He don't be tripping. It's like, oh, Milo be tripping now. Like, you know? And that shit don't work into the whole thing I made for Milo. You know, Milo, that's not that. And I wanted to make something that, was just, I guess, a bit more lived, you know? It's funny, because I don't feel like Milo shit is me, per se. And I would love to make some shit that is me.
That's funny, because me and Chesky were having this conversation the other day, and he was like, oh, you should have, I remember when you wanted to stop being soul a couple years ago?
Yeah.
I think you should have done that. And I was like, not like on some like punking right, shit, but just like on some like, you know, comradely conversation shit, you know, because like people who like the old shit
talking
just
shop like, with you.
There are always like keep me there, you know, and I am like, and no matter, and so I'm in like a whole different lane now, but it's still like I don't, but I feel like that is me, you know what I mean? Soul is me, and the growth, I don't feel like soul is something apart from me. Because I've been it for so
that's
fucking
long. That's fly, man.
Still want to get rid of my name just because I'm just tired of all the associations, you know?
Well, that part, what you just said, too. I'm tired of cats just being like, the only reason you even on is because this dude or that thing or da-da-da-da-da. Shit that ain't been relevant for, like, years, man. It's still cats come to my show. If somebody come to my show, be like, so the Flies Don't Come is my favorite album of all time. Hellfire Club, dog. And I'm like, that shit came out on Ruby App. Like, you know what I mean? I'm like, you got it all wrong. Like, yo, and not even to be a dick, but it's just like, Ruby App's my label. We built this thing up. The record that you love had only to do with, like, my high school childhood homies and myself. But cats will attribute a lot to, you know, other artists and shit like that. And early on, yeah, I love that shit, that association shit, but now I just want to be on my own. So that's why I'm coming at them on some just left field stuff. I've been working on a lot of music, actually, really good music. And I'm excited to put it out. But nobody will know when or how or nothing. I'm gonna just freak them, and I wish more of us did that. That's artists, like, it's like, why not just play? We should play. It gets to the place where you're like, look, I'm cool. I know how to eat off this. I'm gonna be all right. Don't trip. So it's like, what's up? Just play. Like, have fun, dog.
I mean, a really good example of that, I just had this idea. Mm-hmm. You buy billboards. You get billboards in a couple towns. Doesn't even have the album title or the artist or anything. Just has a phone number on it. And then you call it and you get a 7.5-minute poem. What do you think of that idea?
I love that idea.
I'm all about that idea. We kind of did a version of that.
No, I'm telling you what you did.
Okay. Yeah.
But I mean, what? Yeah, like talk about that. That was like awesome.
Thank you, dog. It was some weirdo shit. I just did a MS Paint drawing. That's what that is. And I just used the eraser. I filled it all in black, and then I drew a house and erased it. And then my homegirl had, like, done this beautiful eagle, so I just put this little eagle on this house I drew. And then I just put this phone number, which is a hotline I've had for a couple years. Since I've started Scallops Hotel, I've kept a hotline. I think that's incredibly important. Like, we put too much weight on our internet love. Cats want to be able to get you in other ways. And there's times where, like, the phone call is so clutch. And, like, I just want to be able to give people that tool. Like, to me, that's hip. That's romantic. Like, that's fly. If somebody was like, yo, call this number, you'd be like, what is that? What am I listening to? Like, that's just a little whim for the day. That's ill. So that's all it is just trying to shed lightness with people. What was on it was our manifesto. It is our manifesto right now. I'm going to change it soon.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because I was like, this isn't even on the
Seven
album.
And a half minutes. No, it's just something that, like, you know, of course, nobody gave a fuck about it. Well, not nobody, but, you know, people who professionally digest art did not professionally digest all of my art. They didn't see how I was coming with it. And it was like, this new record, it has some ideas and some undertones that could be missed. And there's supplemental data. And it's like, there's a hotline. Like, there's a billboard. There's a manifesto. There's, like, whole structures of ideas in play here, and I'm trying my hardest to give you every single context clue you need without literally just writing you the essay. You right. know? And yeah, that's kind of what it was about, though. I wanted people to hear this manifesto. I wanted them to hear my thoughts on art and what art was and my crew and my collaborators and how we feel and where we're coming from and where we think we're going. And, you know, it starts with we shit on schoolmasters and police. And it ends with the suffocation. The architecture of suffocation and paralysis will be blown to bits by our celebration of everything, our Jubilee concept. You know, it covers the whole range. And I don't know. I don't think a single person who wrote about my record and made money off of their writing about my record, which is laughing. I'm sure they're laughing. Like, I didn't make money. But you know what I'm saying? I don't think none of them heard it.
That's funny. Yeah, when I just called it on a whim, I was like, all right, what's this shit? And I was like, oh my God, this is some of my favorite writing from dude. Like, why isn't this on anything?
Thank you, bro.
But I just loved the feeling. I felt like I was in, like, World War II.
Yes, yes.
Huddled in a
right.
bunker.
No,
like,
that's
getting
how
a
we
communique
have to do it.
From
yes.
The, and, like, I like breaking through the medium like that, you
thank
know?
You,
and, like,
bro.
And like communicating these ideas on that other level.
We need
know?
To make it cool, man. That's why cats like 6ix9ine. That's why they like this whack shit. Because it's cool, man. They make it easy to like it. I like to get stoned and watch colorful shit on the screen. And all we be coming at them with is hella words. You know? Like, why don't they fuck with... And I'm just trying to think of, like, other ways to get them to engage. I mean, it's still hella words, but what you said, it gets you in this feeling. Something I like to talk about a lot is, even in here, we're in the treehouse. You know, there's a treehouse vibe. Michael called it Houseboat. And it's an energy I bring to creative processes. I like to make a houseboat. I like to make a treehouse. I like people to feel like, oh, dude, that's a secret. Like, we in here, you know? Like, yeah, there's yeah. a low ceiling above us. We're talking in a way we wouldn't in open air. I love that. And as an artist, yeah, I'm all about that. So thank you so much for saying that.
Yeah, I was like, fuck, I wish I thought of that.
That's dope, dog. That's yeah. dope. Do that shit, man. I'll give you the website. It's like $13 a month. I think everybody should have a hotline. And to be fair, I was inspired by They Might Be Giants.
Oh,
and they
really?
Had a thing called Dial a Song. And I think they still do now. I think they brought it back after I brought mine back. But yeah, they have,
oh, nice.
They have Dial a Song where you can call them and it'll play their music. It'll just play a randomized song of theirs. But I was like, man, I'd rather holla at them or hear a joke or something. For a while, I was putting up unreleased songs, but the quality is so hilarious. So that's right. like, you know, if someone would hear a brand new song, but they'd hear, like, only the mid of it. like the worst part of it on the phone. But it's like, that's fun. There's so much to play with on that medium. I'm sleeping on it, honestly, and what you could do with it. Because the service gives you total, like, you can have 8 different greetings depending on shit, all sorts of crazy shit.
Yeah, I've always wanted to.
Segway communications, that's what it is.
Segway communications. I bought a FM transmitter or AM transmitter years ago, and it was like this tiny little thing.
Yeah.
And I always thought, like, how cool it would be to, like, you know, you could, like, broadcast a radio station outside of the venue, you know, so people know.
Oh!
Tune into 88.5.
You know? Outside the venue is genius. I was going to say, John Wayne did that in LA with a record where he premiered it by. He, like, passed out cards or something that had these coordinates, and it was, like, this area of L.A. or within this radius, you could go to the station and hear the album. I thought that shit was so cool. I was like, fuck! At the gig is even cooler, though. Like, I recorded to tape a show in London, but, like, man, to transmit that shit would have been...
Yeah, I mean, I don't know what the legality is of that.
You can't do it. Yeah. Right. I mean, but or...
I think there's, like, a certain, like, wattage
or
that...
Or you gotta be paid, man. I don't know, some shit. Yeah.
Well, you know, one thing we haven't really talked about is Rubaiyat, you know, your crew, and, you know, I guess, like, talk about what Rubaiyat's about and maybe, you know, like, why friendship is important on with...
Oh, yeah, with because lunacy beckons. Insanity is ever present when you're an artist, and you're dealing with chemicals and substances and ideas and people that all eat and take, you know, and you can find yourself without, you can find yourself without heart, without soul, without compassion, without care, you know, you can be depraved that way, you can become depraved making art, because you give so much, people don't think about that. In friendship, especially with artists who are friends, it's just constantly refilling.
Right.
It's constantly refilling. It's constantly just like, I do this for fucking fun. You're right. I do this shit because it makes me happy.
Right.
I don't do this because I'm avoiding a job, because I'm whatever, you know. I don't do this to make money. I don't do this for any other reason than because it's fun, like we always have. And that's what the friends bring, and especially artist friends, people you can make shit with, people who, I mean, you see how my shit is. We got the TV set up on the wall, fools be playing video games, fools be smoking, eating, chilling, cracking wise, and that's the energy that I can be freest in and make shit in. And that's the energy that when I'm not in this studio, you know, I want to step out into that. If I'm frustrated in here, like, oh, this shit ain't working, I want to step out and be like, oh, that's right. Like, nice. You know, that's what's real. And I think we all, in Rubaiyat, we really have gotten kind of hooked on that model. So we're all just about that. We're kind of on some weirdo shit. I don't know what we are at this point. A cult, a fucking gang. I truly don't know what we are.
A guild, a maker's guild.
Yo, we just took it to that place, dog. Like, we really are insane. Yeah.
That's good.
I agree. That's what it says to do in the Hagakure. That's what it says for combat. That's combat training. Literally in there, if you look in there, it says simply be insane. That's how to fight.
That's great.
That's all it says. Simply be insane.
That's awesome. Yeah, I liked... So are you playing with, like, live horns and shit now? Like,
I was. I'm not doing that. The last Milo tour will be through the Midwest in February, and it's just going to be a return, me and my sampler, just back to the roots.
Oh, nice.
But for the East Coast shows, West Coast shows, the big, big ones, you know, the last hurrah, I brought out a drummer, and, yeah, trombone player. Trombone's so cool, man. So soulful. And I'm blessed, one of my homies from way back times is a brilliant trombone player, brilliant musician in general. Chris Mish, a.k.a. Lonnie Frumpet, a.k.a. R.D. Do Good.
What I liked about what I was seeing is that it sort of harkens, and a lot of your music does, harkens back to kind of like, not beat poetish sort of stuff, but... you know, I guess, can you talk about, like, who your favorite poets are that you're referencing?
Yeah, I love the beat thing. I don't like the beat to, a lot of people know, but, you know, the source code is there, man. Bob Kaufman, the OG beat, the real beat, the one who invented the word, what it was about, beatnik. It was made for black body.
And that's what he was embodying. And then, you know, the Jackers came, as they do.
Wait, is that what happened? Yeah. They stole that style from Bob Kaufman?
Yeah. That word was about Bob Kaufman, beatnik. It was his.
Really?
That was him. And they were all like this.
And all he's got is like two books.
Yeah, they were like, this dude's whole way of being is the shit. And they based the whole movement around him and his way of being, which they could never get to because he was too ill. He would look, like, you already know, pull his dick out, piss on the cop's shoes, stand up on a table in the restaurant and just start spewing poetry till they kicked him out, till the police came. It was like in 1 year he got arrested 145 times.
Really?
Yeah. No, he was just like, this is what a poet is. A poet interrupts your day. I'm a real poet. These other fools, they do some shit for people who like little cookies. I'm a real poet. Like, where the police at? Where the fight at? Yeah, he's a real lunatic. And so they were inspired by him. They made him a mythical entity, you know? Ginsberg, all them fools made him mythical and then just jacked us out.
Huh. I mean, he's my favorite poet.
Bob Kaufman?
Yeah, absolutely.
Rightfully so. He's great. Bob Kaufman is a huge influence on me. Really hard to overstate. It'd be hard to overstate Henry Dumas on me. It'd be hard to overstate... it'd be hard to overstate June Jordan on me.
June Jordan?
Yeah, June Jordan.
Who's that?
She's an amazing poet. I sampled on. She's on a lot of my records. She's on Too Much Life Is Moved Up, maybe primarily. Talking about realizing different things about black consciousness and just her whole way of writing. I really love June Jordan. Well, poetically speaking, I love Jack Whitten. He's a painter, but he writes very poetically, you know. Which a lot of painters I feel like do.
Have you ever heard Bob Kaufman read?
No.
It was playing once on the radio in Boulder.
Whoa.
And I was like, what the fuck is this? I recognize this poem.
Yeah.
This is not fucking...
Oh, Jack Gilbert. Yeah.
And it was. And I've never, ever been able to track down a recording of
this. Wow.
Like, I would love to hear that, you know?
Wow.
And I feel like he's probably the first poet I've ever seen introduce postmodernism. Like, you know, probably before it was even a word, really.
Yeah.
You know, like, just like the way he would talk about the absurdities of between... humans and technology.
Cranial guitar. Yeah.
It's good shit.
Yeah, man. I really love that shit. I've never heard him read. And I just splurted out this fool's name while you were saying how ill it was to hear Kaufman, but Jack Gilbert.
Okay.
The Great Fires. My homie Sam put me onto that. That man is a poet. Jack Gilbert is godly. And I have heard him read, and you can hear his stuff on YouTube. And maybe that's where a lot of people should start, is just hear him read like 5 or 6 poems. He has a perfect voice for reading. And his shit really comes alive, vocally.
It's awesome. Yeah, I'm always looking for poets. I found a...
Do you?
Yeah, but I recently found a compendium of anarchist poetry from the 1900s. Mm-hmm. And there's fucking great stuff in there.
Yeah, man, I was
and
really
Ishmael
into,
Reed, too.
What is this fool's real name? Peter Wilson or some shit? That temporary autonomous zone?
Oh, Hakim Bey.
Yeah, yeah, that's his, like, his ill pen name.
Yeah.
I was really into that shit. And then, like, man, you already know, looking in the cat, I was like, who the fuck is
his pedophile shit or whatever.
Yo, so that's real.
Yeah.
That sucks, though.
But, I mean, the idea of a temporary autonomous zone is still a great idea.
Oh, no doubt. And that's how I feel, too. And I almost feel... This is something that I don't hear no artist say. I almost feel obligated as a relatively moral artist, someone who has not done nothing heinous, to put an idea out, you know, like to say an idea so it can be recontextualized away from that.
What do you mean?
Like temporary autonomy.
Oh, yeah,
why is that language
yeah.
not better said, or you know, we know why, because it's tainted with this motherfucker. All right, well, cut this dude off. Right. Let's make a new association. I really, man, temporary autonomous zone, that shit had me going for a minute, especially when I opened the shop up. That was the main engine, that idea.
Really?
Yeah, like, what would that look like?
liberated space in the city.
Bang. Yeah.
People always talk about how to involve music with revolutionary moments and mobilizations and shit. And, like, I wish the two things were more linked in the States, because I think our movements would be stronger. You know, like, just the idea of, like in Greece, you know, I played a show before where, you know, it was like 3,000 anti-fascists just taking over a whole block, you know, playing in the middle of a park with like armed guards on the side and shit, and like being ready to like keep out the cops, to keep out the Nazis.
That's
and you know, you're just like playing a show right
there. You're
doing it. And it's like just imagining like feeling comfortable enough in the States to perform under those circumstances. Like, we've taken over a park, you know, there's 5,000 people here, nobody's gonna do shit, we are safe, we're drinking, we're having a fucking great time.
Man, they'd kill us.
I mean, they kinda do that shit in Oakland at times. There were moments.
Yeah.
But out here they would fucking kill us.
Yeah, we just get shot up.
Oh shit.
That's sad. I would love that. And sometimes what you're talking about, not, I've never been at anything like that in life, and it gives me pause to even hear you talk about it. I mean, wow. But I sometimes kids will ask me different questions about rap or how I got to rap like this, and it's like, I'm the last from the dying planet called rap. Like, I was born in 92, and I can still remember going with my uncle in, like, late 90s, early 2000s to, like, different ciphers and park gatherings and shit that's just like so not allowed anymore.
Kevin Beecham. Did you listen to Kevin Beecham?
Yeah. And it's crazy, actually, when I finally got to the point where I could meet Kevin as a rapper, I brought up to him my uncle, and he immediately recited to me like my uncle's albums, knew all of his shit. And it was like, yeah, great MC. And I was like, that's fucking wild. Because I was like, you probably never heard of him. He's like, who's your uncle? I was like, nah, it's him. He's like, oh, first record, In Due Time. I was like, how did you know that? Like, yo, it's like, that's crazy, bro. He's like, no, man, I love the Chicago guys. All the CDR cats. That was an amazing record. I was like, wow, that's stupid. You know that. That's so cool.
Yeah, that's how I was feeling, actually, listening to, I forget which album it was, but at times it feels like, I don't know if it's because it's recorded onto tape, or is it all recorded onto tape?
My shit?
Yeah. Do you record on Pro Tools? Or are you mostly doing tape?
No. I'm using, what are we using? Is it Ableton?
You record vocals in Ableton?
Yeah.
Wow.
Why not?
And are you guys making, do you make most of your beats on the SP, or are you making...
No, I make a lot of the ones that you, all the ones from the last... three records are off this machine here, this MPC Live. And then I just got for my next shit, I got an MPC 2000 big boy out there that I'm just now teaching myself the mastery of. I wanted to go all the way back on my next shit.
Nice.
And just be totally off the computer mind.
Yeah, I love that. I mean, I just like using an SP-404 for as much as I can, and then...
Oh, I love the 404. That's like my live tool.
Put some drums on it.
That's my live tool. I just load it up, and just whatever comes. It lets me be free on stage. I can't imagine playing shows without that thing.
Do you fuck with the sequencer on the SP?
No.
Okay.
Never have. I know some people make beats with that shit, and it's crazy.
For some reason, I thought you were one of those people, and I was like, how do you do that?
No, bro, I'm not a wizard like that. I just, I like the effects. I like that I can put anything on any pad, and if you think far out about music, then that opens you up to some interesting combo. And that's about it. And I like how you can chain them. That shit is awesome. Like RCA to RCA.
Oh, really?
Yeah, so like... I can run mine through yours, and you can do effects on mine.
Oh, yeah.
Shit like that is hella fun to do. Back in Hellfire, we would do that, chain up 2-3 of them, and all just be doing the beat. That's just fun.
Yeah. Yeah, sometimes I don't know. Sometimes it's easier to get lost when you have, like, shit to play with.
Yeah.
It's like, I love... just have a little keyboard and making some noise, you know, it feels...
Yeah, man, that's what that MPC Live is for me. I'm just like, I can do anything. It has a 6-hour battery life.
Damn.
Dog.
I mean, you can be anywhere. It's kind of big. It's kind of big, but yeah, dog, that thing, you just, and it's got the headphone jack. That's how I made Sovereign Nose, actually. My son, whenever he'd nap, he'd take a nap, I'd make a beat.
Nice.
And that's how the whole record got made. Off headphones, that, and just looking at him and be like, I'm done that going last. You know, been working the beat up.
Yeah. It's crazy being a dad, man. I felt like the first year, when I look back, I'm like, man, that was hard as fuck. But then, like, once they're, like, pretty sentient and like, personality forming, it's like, oh, shit, this is awesome.
Yeah. My kids, too, and it's starting to burst out. And it's like, bro, you're so funny. You're, like, a really funny dude. You might really grow up and just make people laugh. Man, he loves food. What he does, he'll sit in the kitchen with me. I cook. He'll sit in the kitchen with me, want to be a part of every process of the cooking. Then go in his playroom. He got a little kitchen. Do the same shit. He's two. I'm like, that's crazy, man. That's what's up.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Be about that food, boy.
Yeah, people are like, your son's vegan. What does he eat? And then
we're
sitting at a table, and he's eating steamed kale.
Yeah, he's going in on hella good food.
He eats eggs, too, so.
Yeah, my kid, we're vegetarian. We eat eggs. We're about that life. But my dad, his grandfather, is always like, you know, today I didn't let him eat a chicken wing when he was over here or some shit. I'm like, okay, cool. Keep not letting him do that. Like, he wanted one. He don't know shit.
Right. He wants everything.
Right.
He thinks everything's Elmo.
Right. Like, he's not eating chicken wings. But, I mean, I don't know. Even just that, like, man, fathering, being a dad, and a rapper is weird. Being a dad and an artist, being a dad and somebody, like, I've had just different young people come up and tell me about their kids, tell me about their lives as parents, ask me different things and looking for things, advice and stuff, you know, and you're just like, this is wild. Never thought I'd be way out here in, wherever, in Bend, Oregon, talking to you about parenting, vaccines and all these kind, you know, and the ever nagging, just noia, anxiety of parenting. It's just like,
I just realized the other day I went from like being like, oh my god, I'm having a child, the world, you know, global warming's happening, the world is ending, to like, all right, I'm having a kid, shit's fucked up, how do we make this good as possible, you know, like, but like going from like nihilistic to like hope or something.
Or
not hopeful, but you know what I mean? Like,
I'm
it's
hopeful.
Like, it's funny how you,
I'm,
how
I'm
like
hopeful.
the change of perspective having a kid is.
Were you a nihilist?
Not literally.
Oh, man. literally. Yeah. We got to transcribe the look I was giving you.
Just, you know, sometimes you feel nihilistic or hopeless about the future. Or I do. Sometimes I do. I'm like, oh, man, we're never going to fucking, we're never going to pull this together. And chances are we're not going to, but it's going to, she's going to work out how it's going to work out.
Yeah, I don't know.
Be ready.
I've never felt like, I don't know. I just got to win, man. That's my whole shit. You know, I'm from a long line of survivors, poor people who made it happen through incredible odds, people who were slaves, you know. Crazy shit. My grandfather grew up sharecropping.
Yeah. Damn.
Like my grandfather, not my great grandfather, my grandfather. Like, that's not far. He's not even old. He's like 67. Yo, like, you know what I'm saying? He has memories of seeing a black man lynched, you know? Like, what the fuck?
Damn.
Like, dog's not even old. And not even old, man. So it's like, I just want to win, man. I just, like, fuck everything. I just want to make sure my family's cool, the community we're in is cool, and, you know, if I can do that, think like that, then I'm content. Obviously, that's not the answer. Obviously, that's not the whole picture. But you know what? You gotta pick and choose in this life, man.
Right.
And it's like the internet era has us so fucking obsessed with having perfect theory and having the full thing mapped. And it's like, yo, I'd love to have every answer. But ultimately, I just know where I live, and I'm doing what I can, you know? We're in Biddeford, Maine, in a music store. You know, it could be the end of the world, like you're saying, that we're in a music store. And that's something that is really important to me.
Right.
Yeah, it's really important to me. Up to the very end, we tried to get these heathens to to sit down and smoke one and play a rap song. And to the very end, we tried, dog. We did our best, bro. We did our best. These violent fucks wouldn't listen.
Yeah, well, you were talking about your family and shit.
Yeah.
And I'd be remiss. You know, I follow your mom on Twitter. This is, like, pretty much the last question.
So. Oh, no, no, no. I'm not checking time.
So I follow your mom on Twitter, you know.
Dope.
She's one of the, I'd say, one of the top Black Lives Matter online activists.
Mm-hmm. My mama ain't Black Lives Matter by here. It's Black Lives Matter is an organization, though.
Right.
And my mom ain't with them. She's, part of a thing called Community Change Initiative, CCI, which is the oldest anti-racism group in America.
Nice.
And, yeah, she's been on there my whole life, man. My whole life. My first, earliest job I remember my mom working at is a battered woman's shelter in Chicago. I remember going there with her almost every day to drop her off with my stepdad and pick her up. And, you know, even here in Biddeford, my mom worked. Not started, but maintained the after-school program for the kids. Like, she's always been a giver, always thinking in the community mind, always thinking about who has less than us, always thinking about, you know, Rory, we got a lot, even if it don't seem like it. What can we give to the next person? You know, also, what can we make sure they're not going to take from us no more? That's something my mom's really about, justice. My mom's about justice. I'm so thankful for her and her compass and her eye and her way of being, especially in this era of just uncertainty. People are plagued by uncertainty. My mom often knows what to do, and that's a lot of pressure, but boy, she good at it. So yeah, man, thank you very much for saying that about my mama. She loves Black people. She's always thinking about us and how to just further us, get us in a better place. What can we do? And that's a way of thinking that I really think could be cool if it, you know, spread. and not that it hasn't, you know, but just, like, if that shit really meant something, you know, if it didn't just mean, like, Black Panther grosses the most of any Marvel movie, you know, like, I don't give a fuck about no Black Panther movie.
Right.
Like, you know, why don't we all keep that money for us? Like, you know what I mean? Shit like that. You'd be like, we just grossed these people the highest movie of all time. We could have just put that shit in one account and bought this damn island, like I've been saying. Like, you know what I mean? Like, shit like that. You're just like, So, yeah, my mom is all about that, and that spirit, and keeping it alive, maintaining it.
Word. Yeah, well, she's also, like, a voice in Maine, you know?
Oh, so, yeah, so man, she's a voice, dog. I don't even know how that happened. My mom was up on blogging before a lot of people were. She was like, this is good for me, you know? I'm a writer. And she was writing about her life and her emotions, experiences out here in Maine, Black girl in Maine. And it's all still up there, cataloged, years of stuff, very diligent, very, like, man, my mom's a really funny writer. She's got a great sense of humor. She's been a columnist in Portland. She had one with the Portland Press Herald. I think she has one now with the Phoenix, Diverse City. And it's been going on for years and years, man, decades. Yeah, I'm so proud of my mom.
That's awesome. Yeah, it's just like, it was like, it's like, I don't really know how to throw this in here, but...
No,
like,
dog, hey, it's cool. I'm blessed, dog. I'm blessed, man. I have a mom that a lot of people, like, find her like that and be on that same shit. Like, y'all, I don't know how to say this, but I be reading your mom's shit. So it's good. It's good for all of us. She has a voice that everyone could benefit from hearing. That she's my mom is a real treat.
So we talked to, like, a bunch of shit. Is there anything that we missed, or is there anything that's, like, on your mind as we're wrapping up that you know you want to impart?
If you got you know, some loose millions, holla at your boy. I got developments, I got ideas. You try to get in early on the ground floor with this Ruby App thing. Yeah, now is the time, before it's too late.
All right, also, any book recommendations? I always ask for people to throw a book recommendation.
Oh, okay. Book recommendations. Has anybody recommended the Bible?
No.
I didn't think so. I'm going to recommend that.
Okay.
Edit it out. Nah, that's funny.
Have you read the Bible?
Of course. Yeah, no, no. I'm gonna recommend the Bible, man. I would do that for the soul cast.
Well, if people want to follow you online.
Well, I mean, I don't know if they should. If they should follow me online, if you must. I'm Rory Farted on Instagram. I'm Yo Milo on Twitter. We're at soulfolks.org, though. I run a little blog on there that I think is probably cool. MiloRaps.com, RubyApp.com.
And what's that hotline? What's that toll-free hotline?
Oh, yeah, bro. The hotline, 773-509-8000. Catch Ruby out there. 773-509-8000. My transmissions began when Diamond said to Cole, "Why so yielding?" A journey. The valley of quest, the valley of love, the valley of understanding, the valley of independence, the valley of unity, the valley of astonishment, the valley of deprivation, the quest. Left home in search of where the orchid grows. Found a lotus pond in Echo Park and got confused. Met an Aristotelian and got depressing about his awkward views. Why you so quick to divide? So hasty divides and cut in two. Knowing it's impolite to Terry, I went about my way. And I don't like scary niggas, so I ain't been around the way. Picking spinach out my teeth from the floor. Hold his notebook like an advanced new camera. The panorama makes me some kind of past master. Gawking at the pastor as I pen this inhales. The howitzer in the garden of my mind. It isn't always so reliable. Earthworm Nimrod preaching about survival and the orchestral nature of chaos. Lurking in the numbers, burping penumbra. How gracefully he fidgets with the ephemeral. A peon wrote this with the stalk of a peony and a collar of primitive thud, posing by a bust of Pericles eating fudge. Sun officiating, the gooby fashion, seen his hands fastened round the ruby hilt of that old rusty scimitar. Speaking time-tested coda, who the other rhythm wizards are. God bless the soul of whoever you think you are. God bless the soul of whoever you think you are. God bless the soul of whoever you thought you was. Cause it might not be no next time. It might not be no next time.